Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Nathan Totten, and today I'm joined by Nick Harris and Chris Reisner.
Hello.
Who are not allowed to introduce themselves this time.
Yes.
Chris is on our team, and he's sort of the you're the mobile server. You work on mobile services with Nick, and then also iOS, Android sort of things with Windows Azure. Correct.
That's right.
Cool. Why don't you? Have you been on the show before?
I have not.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I've been doing iOS and Android development for a number of years now, and prior to that I was doing .NET development, so I kind of know a little bit about everything, but right now I'm doing iOS and Android, and that's what I'm excited to talk about later today.
So, everything, eh?
So your focus is basically building out device to cloud scenarios.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Cool. I think we've got you on for the main segment today.
Perfect.
So it'll be interesting to see what you can do there with this device.
Cool.
What have we got in the news?
So it's a light news week for Windows Azure. It's certainly not a light news week for Microsoft.
Yes.
For those that watched our show last week, we covered about 40 news items since we haven't had a show quite a while. So the only news really this week for Windows Azure is my blog post that I've written here.
Oh, that's convenient.
ASP.NET 4.5 is actually now live, actually as of Wednesday. Tuesday or Wednesday, now supports .NET 4.5 on Windows Azure websites. So
awesome.
Pretty exciting. So, and I'll actually want to do a quick demo of that before we jump into Chris's segment since we don't have too much news.
Okay.
And then, of course, you know, huge light on Windows Azure this week, but obviously a huge week for Microsoft. Yesterday, Thursday, we had the New York launch of the launch event for Windows 8. Then yesterday, the GA of Windows 8, and then Surface. Everyone should be should get their Surfaces, I think, or should have got them yesterday, maybe. If all went to plan, they'll get them. They would have got them yesterday, so they're all hopefully watching Cloud Cover on their Surface, and a whole bunch of other exciting things. So, but yeah. So I just want to show quickly how to create an async controller, which again is a new feature in .NET 4.5, which allows us to basically, when we're using an async controller and that async keyword, a request comes in and then we can process and do some work, and then and we're not actually blocking on that thread, and then we can kind of have a callback. And all this is happening return a result asynchronously, and all this is happening again in a non-blocking way, and it's actually quite simple to write all that code. So just really quick, I want to make something silly just to make an async controller. Async. And I'm just going to paste some code in here. So we're basically returning, instead of just returning a content result of hello, I'm going to have a task return using this async, and I'm just going to sleep for 3 seconds just to kind of show how that's working. And then I'm going to return again this just content hello. So just run that in the browser really quick. And default one.
That's basically how you name all your code, isn't it?
Yes, very.
Default 1, default 2.
Yeah, all controllers.
Variable X, Y, Z.
So you see here, so it's returned, which it functions normally. But the thing to note here is, again, since we're processing this all asynchronously, we're not blocking on that thread sleep.
Right.
Other requests can come in, and this makes for a very high scale, high performance application. So really easy to do. And of course, this is silly code here with the thread sleep. But you can imagine how you would do this with like making a request to like storage or you know, queuing a message in the service bus or something like that in a completely asynchronous fashion.
Cool.
And really simple to turn, you know, synchronous code or write, you know, blocking code basically into this async using this async controller in just a few keywords.
Yeah.
So let's deploy this up to Windows Azure just to, you know, prove that it's working. So we're going to import our published profile, test cloud cover 34.
Yeah, so that's in line with your default one naming convention.
Took 34 tries to get this demo right.
That's okay.
Yes. So publish that up to Windows Azure websites, again, our .NET 4.5 application using async. Just takes a few seconds to deploy. And so, actually, one thing to note, which I know we've talked about this before, so this is using web deploy, and it's actually uploading all, you see all our assemblies uploading, and actually the internet in this building is, for some reason, quite slow today, so it's taking a little longer, but it's actually uploading all of our assemblies, all our dependencies with this project. Web deploy is an incremental deployment, so if we were to, say, change a style sheet or something, it only deploys the changes, so our next deploy will actually be even faster.
How's it handle NuGet packages?
So NuGet packages, it actually, for web deploy, it does upload all the NuGet packages.
Right.
It's interesting if you do a Git publish with Node, it actually looks at the packages.json and it will download them. Right. I suspect that's something we'll hopefully add in the future where you don't actually have to publish the NuGet packages with your web application,
right.
But that's probably something that has to change not only with Windows Azure websites but also with web deploy.
Okay.
So I would assume that would be something we're looking into in the future, because it would make it a lot faster if you didn't even have to upload those NuGets the first time. So let's just run our simple thread sleep async controller again. It was called default 1. And there we see we make the request, and in about 3 seconds, our asynchronous hello will come back. So pretty simple, pretty cool, you know, enabled, again, .NET 4.5 now available on Windows Azure websites.
Nice.
So with that, that's really, there's not a lot of Windows Azure news today. So I think with that, why don't you show us a little bit about mobile services and this crazy device you have here.
That sounds great.
Actually, you better be careful. Last time I showed a Mac on the show, there was like a nasty comment. Like, I actually had to delete the comment because someone like wrote something terrible.
Really?
They were like angry we had a Mac. So
it was probably just more directed at you.
I think it was actually. I think it was actually Steve who did it.
Okay.
It was Smarks. I'm just kidding. Or Wade, maybe. It seems something Wade would do. So anyway, go ahead.
So a little under 2 months ago, I know you guys did a show with Josh Twist to talk about the release of mobile services. At that point in time, there was just support for Windows 8 release or Windows Store applications. Just a few weeks ago, though, we released a ton of changes to mobile services, which I think you guys talked about in a different episode. Included in that was support for iOS in the form of a client SDK, and then also quick starts and walkthroughs and stuff like that. So we're going to take a look at that today. All right, so we're going to go in here and create a new mobile service. We'll name it Cloud Cover Test.
35, please.
Oh, yes, 35. Got to be in order.
There we go.
We'll use an existing SQL database, because I've already got one. If we needed to, we could spin up a new one, though.
So tell me about the using an existing DB. So multiple mobile services can all point at the one DB, right? So you can have a multi-tenant DB for many multiples.
That's correct. So essentially what happens is when you create a table from a mobile service in a database, it prepends that table name with a schema that matches the mobile service name. So if you had mobile service A and mobile service B and you created, you know, user table, you'd have mobile service A.user and mobile service B.user. So you could use the same database for multiple.
So good way to save cache on your SQL instance.
Absolutely. So it's going to spin up now. It should just take a few seconds. Perfect. Okay, great. So our mobile service has spun up. Let's click into that. All right, so the first thing you're going to see that's different here on the new Quick Start menu is that when we choose our platform, we can also choose iOS. We can go back to Windows, which was basically the same thing that was launched back in August. Now we've got iOS as well. Just like with Windows, we can choose to create a new iOS app or we can connect an existing iOS app. For today, we're just going to create a new iOS app. Let's go in here, and there's three steps to get started. One is installing Xcode, which is the IDE that iOS developers use to create their apps.
Visual Studio?
Sadly, there's no Visual Studio support. Okay. Maybe one day that'll happen. Then download.
I wouldn't count on it.
No, I would not either. Then we can also download the iOS SDK. We don't really need to do that because it'll actually come as part of the sample app we're going to get.
Right, cool.
But it's there if you need it.
So the iOS SDK is just a client SDK for mobile services.
That's correct. It's basically a Xcode framework you can include in your project, which has all the libraries and code you need to access mobile services.
Cool.
So we'll create a to-do item table, which is going to create a table in our mobile services database. That should just take a second. All right, and with that done, now we can actually download the sample application. Let's go ahead and do that. All right, so we've got our quick start application. We'll go ahead and open that up. And the first thing we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and run that on the iPhone simulator. All right, so this should be pretty familiar if you have gone through the Windows Store quick start. It's basically a to-do list, so we can add items to our to-do list. So so we're going to talk on Cloud Cover.
I would like a beer.
Nick needs beer.
Thank you.
Yep. And Nate needs to be less how do you say that? La-di-da?
La-di-da.
Perfect. Okay. So, you know, you're Australian, so you probably already had a beer, so we're just going to go ahead and say that's probably done. So we'll mark that item complete. Again, you know, to-do item list, you can add items, you can mark them done. Very simple. One of the things that we might want to do, though, is, you know, put some data validation on our to-do items. And the same way we can do things with the server-side scripts in Windows, we can do the same thing with iOS. So one thing I want to do is whenever I want to create a to-do item, I want to make sure it's limited so that, you know, there has to be some substance there. So I'm going to say there has to be at least 3 characters in my to-do item. To do that, we'll hop back over to the portal and go to our data tab. So when you go to the data tab, you get a list of all the tables. You can see how many indexes are on that table and then how many records are there. Let's kick into that table. And we can see the data. As you can see, we've got the one record is marked complete, the other two aren't. We didn't actually have to add these columns or specify the columns. That's automatically done by the dynamic schematization whenever you send data across the wire to mobile services.
Cool.
So we'll go over to the script column. So the scripts area, it basically lets you write Node.js style scripts on the server that get executed whenever a CRUD operation occurs. So when we inserted those to-do items, this script right here is called. All it does is basically execute what we wanted, but we could intercept that and do something different, which is what we're going to do right now.
Cloud Cover 35.
Must be Cloud Cover 35.
Your error message is much more descriptive than mine when I do demos.
Well, I don't want to...
Your error message is actually incorrect. 3 characters or more that you have just greater than.
Less than.
Less or than. Less than.
Yeah, so it must be 3. That's
pretty good. Yeah.
Foiled!
Foiled again. All right, so this...
I couldn't... It's far away! I'm blind!
So basically...
Must be the glare off Chris's
head. So it is very bright. My apologies. So basically what we've done here is said that whenever an insert query is done against the to-do item table, we're going to intercept that and check the length of the text property, which is whatever the text we type in for our to-do item. If it's less than 3 characters, we're going to respond with, you know, say it's a bad request and pass this error message back. If it's at least 3 characters or more, we're just going to execute the query just like normal. Let's go ahead and save that. And we will return to our app. And let's just say we'll just try and do AA.
Go away.
All right, so the app crashed, which is good and bad. The app crashed because we didn't actually handle the error like we should have. However...
I think that's proper behavior. Teach them a lesson.
It's true. It would teach them a lesson. That's absolutely accurate. If we look at the actual debug console, though, we can see that the error that came back was your to-do item must be 3 characters or more. Nice. So it handled things correctly. The only issue is it's up to me as a developer to say what should happen when an error comes back. Yeah. So all I'd have to do is go in and change the code that gets called whenever an insert request comes back, and I could say if there's an error, you know, don't crash the app, right. Or you know, show a message, do something.
So while you're in the code here, so you showed a few operations in the UI from the perspective of the iPhone simulator there. I think you showed an insert, you showed an update, and then you showed a refresh or a query. I'm interested to see, you know, for the iOS devs out there, how much code it requires for them to go out and be able to actually wire up to mobile service.
Absolutely, great question. Now, when we downloaded the Quick Start project, it came with all the code we need to access the to-do item table pre-built, but we can take a look at that and see just how easy it would be if you needed to produce it for your own tables or your own code.
Yep.
So to do that, we're going to look at the to-do service class, which basically wraps all of the calls into our to-do item table with mobile services. You notice there's not really a lot of code here. We've got a reference to an array of items, so this is where we store all the to-do items that come back. We have an MS client, which actually stands for Mobile Services Client. That's actually what we use to do all our communication with mobile services. Then we've got a few method stubs, which we'll look at in the to-do service. In the to-do service implementation class, first thing you're going to see in the init method is we create our MS client and we pass over the URL that was used for our mobile service and then the application key. Now, if you were going to create your own application and you just needed to get this information, you can do that in the portal by easily going to your mobile service and then go to manage keys, and here you can access the application key so you can put that in your own application. Coming back over here, after we create our client, we initialize a table with the name of the table on the server. So that's basically saying whenever we use this table property, it's going to be tied to the to-do item table on mobile services. Now, when we actually start the application and it pulls for all of our data, it's calling this refresh data on success method. All these methods take in a block, which is basically a way of saying whenever this method is done executing, execute this code. So it's a block, sort of like a it's a callback method, exactly. So in the refresh data, we're using NS predicate, which is a way of kind of creating a where clause to say that we want a predicate where the complete flag is equal to no. And then we use that table we initialized earlier. We'd call a read where on it and pass in that predicate. So this right here is doing the query on the server side and saying, give me all the to-do items where the complete flag is equal to no. If we got rid of this, we'd actually see all the to-do items even if they're already marked complete. Going down here, we can see the add item. All we're doing in this situation, again, we're using table. We're inserting an item, which is an NS dictionary. If we hop over to to-do-list controller, we can see exactly how that NS dictionary is created when you go to add item. So we're creating an NS dictionary with a text property, or a text element and a complete element. Complete is just defaulted to no, and the text is defaulted to, or is set to the text field, whatever the text the user enters. So that dictionary is what's sent over. Now, behind the scenes, inside of the MS client code, which we wouldn't have to actually change or alter yourself, it's basically going to serialize that as JSON and send it up to the server. So this is the server, the REST API that mobile services supports. It's all JSON-based. So even if you were dropping this, you were replacing the to-do service with code to access your own tables, you don't have to worry about serializing that or converting it to JSON. You just pass in an NS dictionary.
Right.
So if we return to the to-do service, the last bit of code we need to look at is the complete item method. Essentially what happens here is we take the items array and get a mutable array out of that. Then we get a mutable dictionary from the specific item that we're editing. We get a mutable dictionary because if we don't get a mutable dictionary, we can't actually change the items in it. So we've done that. We can then mark the complete element to be yes. And then we can just down here, we can call update on that mutable dictionary.
All right, cool.
Cool?
Yeah. So I've got a question for you.
Yes.
So first things first, I'm not an iOS dev, but in terms of doing client to server, is this a lot more straightforward utilizing mobile services and the client SDK than, say, if you were rolling your own service backend and having to write all the code to push data back and forth?
Great question. And really what mobile services is saving you from is two things. One, it's much easier for me to call self.table update or insert and just pass in a dictionary than it would be for me to A, figure out the serialization and send the data over the wire using NSURL connection and NSURL request. That gets complicated, and you'd have to set up your own blocks, your own request class to handle all that. It can get very complicated very quickly, especially when you're also talking about running the server and figuring out how it's going to handle that data. Are you going to find some way to support dynamic schematization? What are you going to do to save that data? So really, you're going to save a lot of time when you use mobile services.
All right. Cool.
Awesome.
Second question.
Yes.
How long have you been doing iOS dev?
I've been doing iOS dev for about 2.5 years now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because I look at this and I compare it to, so I'm a .NET Microsoft Stack developer, and I got to say,
That's a mess.
Yeah.
So
it's been hard on you, I can see, but being a fellow shaver.
Yes, well.
It was, and .NET was not as hard on you. Or
yes.
Is that what you're trying to imply? You have a little bit more hair.
It truly does. So yeah, that's a good observation, and anyone that's done both .NET and Objective-C can tell you there's a lot of differences in how the languages work. Objective-C has some origins in Smalltalk, which uses object messages, as opposed to dot notation, which is a lot of what .NET uses. So it can be very easy to come into this and say this is, you know, not straightforward, whereas a lot of people that have done just Objective-C would probably look at this and say this is, you know, beautiful code, yeah, but would look at .NET and maybe not be quite so impressed either. So, right, you know, it really does come from the background you're in. If you've done .NET, this might look weird. If you've done Objective-C, .NET's going to look weird.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So one of the other things I'd like to look at that was new with the release that came with iOS is authentication through other providers. When mobile services first came out, could only use Microsoft accounts. Now we're supporting the full gamut of Microsoft accounts, Twitter, Facebook, and Google authentication. So what I'd like to do is add some authentication to my application so that I need to log in through Twitter in order to make it work. First thing I'm going to do is go back to the portal and go to my data tab and go to my to-do item. I'm going to go over to the permissions, and basically what this allows me to do is I can say who's allowed to perform these actions on my table. By default, when I created the table, it said anybody with the application key. So if you remember when I initted my MS client, I put in the application key. So when I did that, it basically said whenever MS client makes a request to the server, it's going to send that application key with it. So that's basically what allows this to happen. I'm going to change this to say that only authenticated users can do it now. So let's save those changes. Let's hop back to our app really quick. We'll rerun it. All right, and as you can see, it didn't actually work. And if we go down to the debugger, we can see that...
Well, it did work. It behaved as expected, right?
Well, that's because true. It did behave as expected.
It expects you to be authenticated now.
Right. Well, it expected, but it still is trying to make a request to the server.
Yep.
However, the server is going to return an error, unauthorized. So the server, it behaved exactly as we expected to. The client, though, it needs some work now.
Yep.
So what we really need to do is we need to authenticate with Twitter in order to make this work. So let's hop back over to the browser, and I'm going to open the Twitter dev portal. And I'm going to sign in using my ultra cool cloud cover test. Sorry, it's not 36. I created it before I knew.
At cloud cover test.
Yes.
don't actually use it.
All right, so we'll go ahead and create a new application. In order to do this, I'm going to have to go back to my mobile service because I need the URL that was generated. So if I go over to the dashboard, I can see the mobile service URL. We're going to copy that. Go back here, and we're going to say cloud cover test is the name and the description. And then for the website, I'll paste in that URL. That's all we need to do to generate our application. We just need to go down here and agree and do the captcha.
See how good you are at this.
Some of those are getting tricky these days.
Yeah. They can be.
I tried to.
It's always the second word, though. It's really hard.
Yeah. Someone had a good point, like reCAPTCHA.
Yeah.
I think they're like running out of the easy words because I was on Ticketmaster a couple weeks ago and I gave up because I was gonna buy a ticket to a concert and I literally just gave up because it took nine times and I couldn't get the caption.
Why didn't you just press the audio button?
Yeah, it is too much work. So I just didn't buy the tickets because it was like I kind of wanted to go but not that much. So
it just wasn't meant to be. All right, so now that our application is created in Twitter, we're going to go down to look at the OAuth settings, and we need to copy the consumer key and the consumer secret. This is basically the way that we connect our mobile service to our Twitter application. So back in the portal, we go to the Identity tab, and this is where you're going to enter the settings for any of the providers you use for authentication. We're going to go down here and copy in our consumer key and our consumer secret to Twitter, and then we'll save that. All right, so that's saved. So now, in order to actually log in, we do need to make some changes to our application. So let's go back to Xcode, and we're going to go to the To-Do List controller. And when the To-Do List controller is first initialized, when ViewDidLoad is called, that's where, right here, we're calling that refresh on data success. That's basically doing the where clause to the server and saying, give me all the to-do items that are marked complete is not true. So we need to comment that out because we don't want to just pull that data. Instead, what we're going to do is copy a little code, and we're going to drop it right here. And what I've pasted in is two methods. First, there's the viewDidAppear method, which is part of the view controller lifecycle, so it's going to be automatically called just as part of the application. And then inside of that, I'm checking my to-do services client's current user property to see if it's nil. If it is nil, then I'm basically going to call the login method. What that login method does is it creates a new controller from the MS client's login view controller with provider method. Well, this basically wraps a web view. So we're saying we want to authenticate with Twitter. So this basically will say, I want to create a web view and I want to put, you know, load the URL to do authentication with Twitter. Then down here we've got a completion block that basically said, if there was an error, we're going to log the error. If not, then we want to refresh the data and then we can dismiss the view controller. Lastly, we're going to actually present the web view controller to the screen so they can authenticate.
Nice.
So let's rerun our app now. All right, so cool. Perfect. So we get the Twitter authentication. Let's go ahead and do that.
What's your password?
It's very secure. It's sort of like password.
Yeah. Does this, if we use the, if we use Facebook Auth, does it use like the new Facebook Auth, the dialogue for, with like iOS 6 that pops up, or does it still use the web view?
Great question. So as long as you're using this method right here where it's login view controller with provider, it's going to use the, it's going to do the web authentication.
Okay.
However, there's an override for logging in where you can actually tell it what the provider is and give it the token. So if you wanted to use the custom Facebook or Twitter authentication that's in iOS 6 and 5 for Twitter, then you can do that, and then you just pass your token and Twitter or Facebook into your calls to the few mobile services. That way mobile services still knows that your user is authenticated.
I see, which probably, I mean, really is a better experience. Is in iOS 5, you can use the, it's like the Facebook app does auth, so you don't have to type in your password. And Twitter, I don't know how Twitter does it.
I believe there's something similar.
But in iOS 6, they're both integrated like in a very nice, simple way. So
yeah. So yeah, if you wanted the best experience, that's definitely something you'd want to look at. And like I said, the override to just pass the provider and the token is there.
So that's super easy to do. I like this. I mean, this gives you a very easy to start experience, but like for a better end user experience, you just have to override that, which just sounds like it's still pretty easy.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Nice. So now that our app is loading, we're only going to get the to-do items, you know, because our users are authenticated. However, we've got one more issue we're going to tackle today, and that is that anybody that's authenticated is going to see the same to-do items. Now, I'd love to create these to-do items and have Nick and Nate, you know, load their to-do list and see my items and take care of them for me.
And do your work.
That would be great. So if you could do that, that'd be perfect.
I'll do Nick's. Oh, wait, you already deleted Nick.
Yeah, he already
I was going
to
do Nick's
sorry,
task.
Sorry. So what we really want to do is change that. So
sorry, you can talk on Cloud Cover. You can contribute to this show.
That's true. So what we really want to do is whenever an item is generated, we want to save my user ID, and then when we pull all the to-do items back, we want to filter them by the user ID. So we're going to do all this actually in the server-side scripts. Now, there's some stuff you could do a little differently if you wanted to and do them on the client side, but there's a reason for doing it on the server side. So we're back into the to-do item in the data section. We're going to go to script, and we're going to go to the insert operation. So here what we need to do is we need to add the user ID to where the data is being saved.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to say item.userID equals user.userID. So this user property that's right up here, or variable rather, that's automatically sent in once our user is authenticated with the MS client in Objective-C. So we're automatically sending the user over. You don't have to handle doing it behind the scenes. That user object contains the user ID. So here, we're going to dynamically add a new field to the item that comes over, and the item contains the text and the complete flag. And we're going to call it user ID, and we're just going to set it to the user ID. So let's go ahead and save that. Let's return to our application, and we're going to test the users out. So we'll add that item. All right, so let's go back to the data now and go to Browse. Now you can see that, like I said before, we didn't have to tell it to add a user ID column. We just passed the user ID in, and it just, using the dynamic schematization, added that. So we've got our Twitter user ID in here now. So that's great. You know, now we're saving user IDs for each item. Now what we need to do is actually filter them. So we're going to go to the to-do item table scripts. We're going to go to the read operation. Now this is one of the things where you could do it on the client side, where we're doing the NS predicate and saying, show me, or, you know, give me all the items where completed is equal to no. And it's no because in Objective-C, it's no and yes. It's not true or false, which you guys are used to.
Okay.
So where we're saying the NS predicate where all the completed items equals no, we could in there put an additional NS predicate on it and say where user ID is equal to my user ID. However, someone could always alter that query, get into your code, change it, and you know, we don't want that to happen.
Yep.
So what we're going to do here is we're going to override the query. So what we're doing here...
It's a colon there, rather than a... Ta-da.
Right, you are. So what we're doing here is basically saying, I'm going to take the query that's sent in, and that's the one that has the NS predicate thing on it. We're going to add a new where clause that says, is the user ID equal to the user ID of the user that's sent in?
Yep.
So now if we rerun our application...
We should only expect one result, right?
We should only expect the one result. We are going to authenticate, and that's because we're not by default saving the user information unless you have to say you want to save it. So that it's your choice as a developer.
Yep.
So we've only got the one item. We've only got the test users. It's great.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely. That's pretty much it for the iOS stuff at the moment. But keep in mind that including the server side scripts is the functionality to do, and a lot of stuff you can do. You can do HTTP requests. You can send email. You can send text messages. You can do custom database queries or run stored procedures. There's a ton of stuff that you can do from the server side scripts as well.
Yeah.
All right, that's great. That's a lot of cool stuff. So we've got Windows 8 now with mobile services, and iOS, and I assume Windows Phone will be coming soon, and Android will be coming soon as well.
Definitely on the plans.
Very cool. Very cool. So thanks for showing us everything. The last thing I want to mention is build is starting on Tuesday. So I know the tickets sold out in like 5 minutes or something, so obviously all of our millions of viewers can't be attending Build in person.
Yeah.
That was a joke. All the hundreds of millions of viewers.
Billions.
So, yes.
Well, now that you have iOS, you have billions.
Yes. Yeah. So we're going to build streamed live online. So if you want, Tuesday, the whole week, a lot of the sessions, the keynotes, things like that will be streamed. So we've got a lot of great Windows and Windows Azure, all kinds of developer content. So some really cool stuff. So definitely check out Build next week and watch it live, or the sessions will be available afterwards in recorded form. So cool.
Nice.
I think with that, we'll call it a day.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell the viewers your Twitter handle?
Sure. Do I do the hand thing?
You can. Bob will be angry, though, but it's fine.
It's at Chris Reisner.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. So thanks for watching, as always, and follow us on at Cloud Cover Show on Twitter, and email Nick your complaints. So thanks for watching.
Thank you.